All right. Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Wittrout. How are you doing this week, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
All right. We have a pretty big week of news of EV and Tesla news to discuss, partly because of the Frankfurt Auto Show that brought us a few new EVs that we're going to discuss later on. But first off, we have a lot of Tesla news that happened this week. I would argue that the biggest one is about the, even though we heard about the new Model S stuff and the new plate powertrain and stuff, I would argue that the biggest news this week is actually about Tesla battery cells. We first posted that right after the last podcast, so that was actually last weekend, but a few more information trickled out during the week. Jeff Dunn's team, so Jeff Dunn is Tesla's battery research partner out of Halifax. They release a new paper, and that paper is basically unveiling a new battery cell prototype that they have that they've been testing over the last few years. They've been testing the cycling capability of the battery for longevity, and they believe that that battery, with a similar performance of current lithium-ion battery cells that Tesla use, but with much longer longevity, talking about something that would enable over a million miles, over 1.6 million kilometers of use without any major battery degradation. All right. So how they do that, the battery cell that they describe in this is a regular lithium-ion cell, but using a single crystal NMC cathode. So it's a different NMC. Of course, Tesla use NMC right now mostly for its stationary energy product. But they've been speculation that they could move with higher performance cells like this to also for vehicles. And the research paper talks also about vehicles. So it's not exactly 100% sure that it's going to be vehicles, but I have it on good authority. Excuse me. I have it on good authority that's for sure going to be going to end up in Tesla as energy storage products and most likely also in Tesla's vehicles. So this single crystal NMC cathode is the big difference, also used with a new advanced electrolyte. And that's where things change a little bit. So there's this electrolyte coating that they use for this particular cells. They've tested it on over a bunch of different conditions and going up to 40 degrees Celsius, it was still lasting about 4,000 cycles, which is about twice what Tesla's current cells are lasting at the same rate. And but of course, you rarely get the cells at 40 Celsius. I mean, Tesla use a cooling system for its battery. They use a thermal management system. And well, excuse me, I'm still sick this week. So with the thermal management system, you can actually keep the batteries in a cooler environment, closer to 20 degrees Celsius, which is optimal. And doing that, they were able to make the battery last over 6,000 cycles without any major battery degradation, battery capacity. By any major, I mean like 90% battery capacity. We're already seeing some good capacity retention in Tesla vehicles, like even older ones in 2012 or something. But we're seeing around 90% starting at around like 200,000 miles and things like that, which is still pretty good. But now we're seeing about 90% after 6,000 cycles, and 6,000 cycles would put you way over a million miles. So that's a big difference here. And that paper comes as just a few months ago, Elon was talking about making Tesla vehicle last a million miles. He says the Model 3 was developed as a commercial vehicle to last a million miles, except for the battery modules, which he expects to last 300,000 miles to 500,000 miles.
Yeah, and it's probably not a coincidence that he's talking about a million miles and his battery research arm is developing a cell that can last a million miles.
For sure, when was started? 2016, I think, when the research partnership was started with Jeff Dunn. And one of the goals of the research partnership was make our batteries last longer. So Elon has been thinking about that for a long time and is thinking, because a lot of people are thinking also like 1 million miles, all right, like who the hell keeps their car for 1 million miles? The idea is Tesla is pushing hard on the self-driving front and a shared fleet of self-driving vehicles. And so like a Uber-like service with all electric Tesla vehicles driving themselves. And the big advantage when you do that is like the cost per mile goes way down. So then the differentiating factors between cars, between services like that, because there's going to be competing services like Tesla is planning to do with the Tesla network, it's going to compete on cost, and the differentiating factor was going to be how long those vehicles last. Going to have a big effect on the cost, because the cost, of course, of the drivers just goes way down because it's a self-driving driver. The cost of the fuel goes way down because it's electric, and then it's also same for everybody else. So the differentiating factor is going to be the amortizing. Is that a word?
Yeah.
Amortizing the cost of the vehicle over its operating.
Yeah.
Amortization of the vehicle over its life cycle. So you want the life cycle to be as long as you can make it to be. And Tesla is aiming for 1 million miles of it,
and
which is a pretty...
And 1 million miles in a robo-taxi isn't, you know, a decade. It's probably a few years, because those things are going all day and night, every day, 7 days a week, 360
Except for charging.
Yeah, I mean, they have to charge, and theoretically, like, not too many people are going to need rides at 3 a.m. So maybe they're idling, you know, a few hours in the evening, or, you know, obviously charging. But, you know, like during the day, that there's no reason for them to be to stop working. If they're robo taxis, they don't need to take lunch. They don't need to do any of this stuff that current Ubers and taxis do. So they're just going to be driving and driving and driving.
Yeah, cleaning a little bit probably, like, you know, it's a bit.
Also at night probably.
So yeah, that came out on, well, I think Friday or Saturday, the paper came out. Then we just posted today that Tesla filed for a patent for a very similar battery cell. Of course, they applied for that patent way before the paper was released. Of course, there's the chronology here matters, because you don't release a paper and then file for a patent after that. But it's just to show that it's not, because when I posted that, I made a big deal out of it when I posted the paper, because I'm told from sources that this is a big deal. This is a very important product for Tesla, especially within the context that Tesla has been pushing to manufacture its own battery cells. So it's a new product line for Tesla, really. And of course, the Tesla naysayers, the shorts, they all said, yeah, it's just a research paper. First of all, it wasn't just a research paper on test results of battery cells prototypes, so it's not vaporware. And then today Tesla, well, the patent office released Tesla's patent application for not the exact same battery cells, but the same cells, that an NMC 532, so the same single crystal cathode, so, and one of the same electrolyte, with one additional additive to it. And that's another thing that we've been reporting on for a while, that Jeff Dunn and his team have been working on for Tesla, is those adding additives to the electrolyte. And they've been doing that, but the industry has been doing that for a while, but they do it with many different electrolytes. And it's like a guessing game almost, what works and what not, because it's not everyone understand really how they act together. But Jeff Dunstein believed that they found they can reduce the number of additives to just two. So it's a more simple thing that they can understand easier. And it still has a major impact on the battery cell's performance. So they're talking about a battery cell that is cheaper, again, because they use fewer additives, but also enhanced performance. And again, as we just reported, increases the lifetime of the battery cell. So Tesla applied for a patent for that. Well, they applied for it last year, but it was published today. So we reported on it today.
Just curious how you find patents. I remember there was that tool that that guy showed me a while ago. Are you using that, or do you just search, or what?
Well,
proprietary secret info.
Yeah, I mean, it's all public information. I just have my alerts, things that I set up, page alerts, that if a page changes or something. And on the patents office website, when this has a new patent coming up, it just shows up for me. But anyone can just go to their website and search for it. Of course, you have to make your search work with Tesla as a company, because, of course, Nikola Tesla has a bunch of patents. There's also a bunch of other companies that are called Tesla or a variation of Tesla something. So you have to check out for Tesla Inc. Or in this case, actually, it's Tesla Motors Canada, because it was filed with the partnership with Jeff Dunn is with Tesla's Canadian division.
Oh, interesting. So,
yep.
The more interesting thing for a lot of people, because battery technology isn't necessarily interesting, although it produces interesting things, was that Elon decided that he's going to take the next generation Model S to the Nürburgring and try to beat Porsche's record, we assume, although he didn't say that.
He did not right say that, yeah. So I wasn't sure. I mean, now I'm not sure anymore if that was really, like, it was clear, because he just tweeted another thing about Porsche, and then he tweeted that, oh, by the way, we're bringing Model S to the Nürburgring. But then, since then, we now, and that's the news we're going to discuss, Tesla has announced the new Plaid powertrain and a new chassis prototype too. And Tesla also brought other things, other version of Model S in Nürburgring. So we're thinking maybe it's just to test their own things, because especially if it's not a production car, then they cannot even claim the record from Porsche.
Right, for a production car.
Yeah.
A four-door sedan production car. But, you know, they could always later on say, all right, we're going to make, you know, 100. Because Porsche isn't going to sell a ton of the Turbo S's. Tesla could say, oh, we're going to make, you know, 100 or 200 or 500 or 1,000 of the special Nürburgring record Teslas for collectors. And they could probably sell them for 160,000, less than Porsche sells theirs for, and still be fine.
I'd argue that they don't even need to do that, because this new Plaid powertrain that we're talking about here, which is the three-motor powertrain that Tesla first released in the prototype new Roadster, next-gen Roadster, now it sounds like they are making it fit in the new chassis prototype for the Model S. And Elon says that this is coming next year for Model S, Model X, and the new Roadster. So if it's coming next year, I mean, I'm not exactly clear what's the timeline for the Taycan. I know the Taycan is not going to be in North America this year, so it's going to be next year anyway. I assume that there are going to be some deliveries in Europe by the end of this year, though. But they might not be that far out from like the Plaid and the Taycan, at least in the U.S. So if they do break the record with the Plaid, the Model S Plaid powertrain, it could make sense that we accept the record as beating the top production Taycan. And like you said too, it's like it's apple to oranges too, just with the pricing of it. Right. That fully equipped, you're gonna run like $200,000 for that that Taycan Turbo S.
And apparently the one that they're testing. So I never got an answer for you on this one, but Elon said it was a 7-seater in a reply to somebody.
Yeah.
Is it just that the Tesla can have 7 seats, or is it that the actual car going around the track is outfitted with 7 seats? And if so, are they the jump seats in the back, or is there some kind of new seat configuration?
None of that is 100% clear from what Elon said. Well, we're all going from what Elon said, and there's been a bunch of pictures of the cars coming out, but they are blacked out windows and everything, so we don't really see well inside what's going on. One car has apparently been spotted with a roll cage, so like even that, like it looks very prototype. What Elon said is that one Model S numbering that they brought to Nürburgring, and they brought a bunch of different Model S numbering. One of them is a what did he say exactly? He said, as seven seats. And then he answered to someone, but why? And he answered, to sit seven people. So we're speculating a little bit here, but I would assume that it would be very sneaky for Elon, like, if the car has just two jump seats in the back, like it used to be an option for the Model S, it would be sneaky for Elon to use that and saying seven seat, because Tesla used to say five seats plus two, because it's only for children in the back. So I would assume that he's talking about seven seat for seven people. So seven people would mean like possibly seven adults, which is not impossible. If Tesla managed to fit seven, like three rows of in the Model Y, I'm sure they could do it for the Model S. However, the question is, why? Well, so the guy was at a fair question. Of course, you don't take it as a joke, but it's a fair question. Is it just for the Nürburgring thing? And even then, like, why would you do it for the Nürburgring? It makes no sense. And then if it's not just for the Nürburgring and they actually plan to bring that to production, there's still a question of why. Why would you want that for the Model S? I mean, the Model S is a sedan. Even the jump seat option, I mean, I know it was very useful for a few people, yourself included, but they discontinued the feature because it wasn't selling well at all. And especially after they introduced the Model X, and I think it's still the case. If you want a seven-seater Tesla, you go with Model X, not a Model S. Model S is more.
Or by the time this is released, Model Y.
But good point. Because by that time, you're going to have the Model Y, so you're going to have two options with the third row. So the S won't make much sense for that. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what they're doing that. So a lot of questions this week with what was announced with this new Plaid, the powertrain thing. But the Plaid powertrain was also brought not just to Nürburgring, but also to the Laguna Seca racetrack in California. And there it apparently did break the record for the fastest four-door sedan with a 1:36 second lap time. So that's impressive on its own. And that's when Tesla announced that was the Plaid powertrain that did it. Sorry, the Plaid powertrain and this new chassis prototype, whatever it is. And that's also when Elon announced that more details will be released about that Plaid powertrain soon, and it will come out. It is a year away, so not just next year, but a year away. So I would put it like summer, fall of 2020.
Right, and that's best case scenario.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? I feel like if you release that new powertrain, it should match the Roadster release, right?
Might as well. I mean, if you've got that powertrain, I'd also wonder. Like, we get a lot of criticism for talking about future versions of the Model S and X. I wonder also if announcing that they're going to have this Plaid powertrain version in a year, I wonder if people who are thinking about buying a P100D over the next year are going to delay that purchase and wait for this thing.
Yeah, the Osborne effect. I was surprised about that too. Like, I didn't get the point of all this week. Like, why did they announce it this week? My only explanation is that, I mean, I don't want to believe that it's about the Porsche Taycan, like that Tesla was so frustrated by the claims that Porsche made that they're like, oh, we need to come out strong this week. I don't think that's what happened. I think maybe like going ahead of leaks, like they thought, oh, it's going to leak anyway, so might as well release it now because they know it's going to affect Model S and X sales. But I feel like they might have already given up on trying to bring back the sales until they have the refresh, and the refresh has obviously been pushed. Now I think it makes more sense to match it with this Plaid powertrain in the new chassis. And I think all of that also come off, of course, with the new cells. I think when they're going to switch to new cells for Model S next program, new cells, new battery, whole new powertrain, basically. And now it sounds like all that is coming next year. So next year is going to be a big year for Tesla. I mean, a whole new refresh of, and I think we can call it that at this point. Like, if you have a new powertrain, and I think the interior refresh is going to come at the same time too. new refresh of Model S and X line. Model Y is going to come. Roadster is, of course, up in the air because Elon said it's not a priority, but officially it's still on the 2020 timeline, so Roadster. And
didn't he say that, I think MKBHD asked him if he was going to take the Roadster to Nürburgring, and Elon replied next year.
Yeah, but that bringing it to Nürburgring doesn't give us much of an idea of the timeline to release, though. It's more about testing. It's just like they're testing their plate powertrain now, and then they're bringing it's not coming out until next year, so I wouldn't put too many eggs in that basket. Right. However, Tesla Semi is also supposed to be late 2020, so 2020 should be a massive year for Tesla. And that pickup truck, now he's talking about November unveiling. Tesla normally tries to aim about a year from the unveiling, they start production, but now you're starting to load up the calendar a lot for 2020. Tesla's going to need a lot of hands on deck if they want to keep to their timeline, which, of course, it's a contradiction by itself, saying that Tesla's.
And don't forget, in November, we're going to find out about the pickup.
That's what I just said.
Oh, did you say it?
Maybe I said truck or something, and you thought I was still looking at the semi.
Yeah.
All right. One of the other prototype that Tesla brought to Nürburgring, we just posted the image of it today. It was spotted during the industry poll yesterday. And we don't know what's inside of it. That, like I said, Tesla brought a bunch of different Model S's to Nürburgring. And we saw one the day before that was... there was no visible changes from the outside, really. At least nothing, except maybe for like the tires or something. So it looked like it might be just like a regular Raven Model S. Maybe some modification inside, we don't know. But this one that we saw today, a whole new fascia. So a much bigger hair intake in front that almost cuts in half the flat nose of the Model S. So that was interesting. Massive sprotter, rear sprotter in the back. And it's one of those weird ones, like a NASCAR ones that just go straight up. So unless Tesla is planning some kind of active sprotter that changes if you're in the highway or something, or if you're in track mode, I don't think that's something that they're going to ever brought to production. So there's that. And also wider fender around the rear well, which tells me that they have to have wider wheels, wider tires on those cars too. That's why they would have a wider body around the fenders, around the rear wheels.
It also looks like it sits a little lower.
Yeah, you're right. Definitely. Lower suspension. So then the question is why? Are they just like modifying that car to get the great time on the Nürburgring track? Maybe not sure why they would do that though, because again, they couldn't really claim Porsche's record because they do it with a highly modified, well, somewhat modified vehicle. Or is it maybe they're working on some kind of kit on like a special version of the Model S, like you said, like a maybe not a Nürburgring version, but like a track ready version of the Model S? That could be like a new high end version of the car, a Turbo S Model S. If Tesla would really want to stick it to Porsche, take the Taycan, they would go out and release a Tesla Model S Performance Turbo S that would with higher performance of the Taycan Turbo S. That'd be funny. All right. In other Tesla news, a new general assembly line coming up in Fremont Factory. A look at Tesla's building permit application at the Fremont factory. We posted two articles on that this week because it unveils a bunch of stuff, including the demo and rough grading. So basically the preparation work for a GA5. GA normally for Tesla means general assembly, so general assembly line. For example, GA4 is the now infamous tent at Tesla, the product, the general assembly line under the tent for the Model 3. So a GA5 would mean another one. And if there's rough grading happening, I have to assume that it's going to be outside the factory again. So it might be another tent going on here. I don't know. I mean, Elon has been raving about the tent for a year now. So I wouldn't be exactly surprised if they do another tent. Well, and people have been arguing, is it really a tent? Because it's like, what would they call it? Like a temporary structure or something like that?
Yeah, I know that people will make fun of it if it's a tent again, but it works.
Yeah.
Like, it's covered. I mean, I feel like those factories have so many doors, like huge open doors to the outside, that there's no way they can keep, you know, the temperature inside differently. So, you know, what's the point of, I don't know.
And it doesn't seem like a big deal. It's in California too, so.
Right.
I mean, Fremont does get a little bit cold in the winter, but. All right, so there's that coming up. And we assume, I mean, it doesn't mean that the new production line is going to be for the Model Y necessarily, but it's certainly within the context of Tesla introducing Model Y production to Fremont factory next year, because Model Y, Model 3, they share a lot of parts, and they need to figure out, they need to increase the production volume of both for all those parts. So they're going to have to figure out a way to either, Model 3 having its own line and Model Y having its own line, or just both having the same car going down the same lines, but still needing another line, because Model Y, they expect it to be an even bigger production program than Model 3. They think the demand is going to be, I mean, didn't Elon say like between 500,000 and a million a year for the Model Y, he expects?
Yeah, I mean, it was supposed to be the biggest car, you know, bigger than all the other cars combined.
Yeah.
Which is basically going to be bigger than the Model 3 plus a few extra Model S and X by the time it launches.
Yeah, because if you look at the Model 3 program right now, I mean, it's supposed to become bigger, especially with the start of Gigafactory 3 in China. But most recently, they've been maintaining it really at 5,000 units a week, which is 250,000 units a year. They could probably bring like that to like 300,000 units a year. But until Gigafactory 3 is online, once Gigafactory 3 is online, the Model 3 program will probably become a 500,000 units program per year, as Tesla intended in the first place. But yeah, so Model Y, I agree, is going to be at least that. Maybe twice. I don't think that's optimistic, but. All right, the other thing that we figured out from the building permit application this week is that Tesla is building the first rooftop solar array at Fremont Factory. So that's something Tesla has been criticized about a little bit, because they are a solar installer after all, especially since they bought SolarCity. And they took their time to installing solar power at their own facilities, especially the Gigafactory one, which from the get-go, like back in 2013, Elon said it's going to be fully powered by solar, and they only started installing the solar system in 2018. And even then, it's still not complete. Like, it's supposed to be like a 70 megawatt system. And I don't think it's like a quarter of that, maybe. Anyway.
I mean, the factory is not even complete.
They
have a couple more blocks to go, I think.
Yeah. It's a third of the size, I think, of the final size they wanted. Fremont Factory, they have that since 2010, and they don't have solar power on it. But we learned from the building permit application that Tesla is planning a solar array system, at least on the admin part of the building. So, when you arrive at the front of the Fremont factory, you have like the Tesla store on one side, the building that sticks out from the factory, and on the other side of that, in front of that, basically you have the Tesla admin building with all the offices and stuff are there for the people that work at the factory. So they're gonna build a solar array on top of that. But that's still connected to the factory and everything.
Yeah, I mean, that's, if you look at your the gallery and your post, that's some flat area. But there's a lot of stuff on the roof.
Yeah, not ideal.
In other places, I mean, obviously this is an older factory. I mean, older 70s or 80s, but you know,
and it's been added to a bunch of times too. So right. Yeah, it's so not,
it's more of a retrofit.
Yeah, it's the you're right. The roof are pretty weird, like a. So fitting a large array on top of that is not ideal.
And I kind of feel like putting solar on the roof is kind of Tesla's last priority in terms of like things to get done.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously getting cars out the door, getting their whole like Solar City acquisition sorted out. Those seem like higher priorities,
yeah.
But I mean, I guess that's a built-in, you're a built-in customer for Solar City if you do that.
Yeah. But at the same time, my point with that is like, Tesla keeps saying like it makes financial sense to install the solar power. Like it just makes sense. You're going to save money and everything. So if they are themselves a large consumers of electricity, then like you become your best customer, install it on yourself and then save your money there. So yeah, lead by example and stuff. So then that stuff I like. The other thing that we figured out from the building permit application is a new 24 stall supercharger coming up at the Fremont factory. However, doesn't sound like it's going to be a public one because they say it's going to be located behind the South Paint building. So the paint shop, the South Paint shop.
So would that be for employees or would that be for new cars? Or
I think it'd be for new cars, I think, because Tesla already has another supercharger station that's for like cars that could come out of the factory. And if they are increasing the output a lot, it would make sense to have more stalls. So that's probably it, in my opinion. But I don't know for a fact. I'm just going off of the building permit application, which just says install 24 superchargers behind South Paint. New asphalt pavement provides sight lighting and power to equipment and structural anchorage and equipment pad details. So those building permit application, they don't have much information on it. It's like just like a summary snippet of the whole thing. Still, I thought it was worth noting interesting stuff. All right. Pedestrian warning system. They are coming for all electric vehicles, people. They are now part of the law in the U.S. and in Europe. And we've seen a bunch of automakers already implementing them, including Jaguar and Mercedes-Benz. Now, Tesla is joining the group starting September 1st. If your Model 3 has been produced September 1st, 2019 forward, it is equipped with the pedestrian warning system. We've been talking about that for a while because they've been discussing the law for a long time. But now in the US, it is regulation that new electric cars need to have a sound to alert the presence at up to 19 miles per hour. So, yeah. The idea is that electric cars are so quiet at low speed. A higher speed doesn't matter much because it's more about tire noise than actual engine noises. So they figure out that you need a sound to alert of the presence. And we know that Tesla was working on it because we saw like on the underbody panel in the front of the car, there was a perforated panel like for a speaker. There wasn't a speaker in there, but they were ready for it. Since September 1st, we posted an article. We posted all the imagery of the system on Electrek. But now the system, the speaker system, is inside the car and it's emitting sound when you are driving at speeds lower than 19 miles per hour. It's not ideal. I mean, especially if you look at some of the, even the gasoline engine cars these days, some of them are very quiet at low speed. They are extremely quiet. Maybe not.
Get it. The jury's kind of still out on whether or not those help vision impaired people see or, you know, hear.
Be aware of the presence.
Cars coming. I think, yeah, I mean, I think that the rolling tire noise and the other kind of stuff is enough. If you're, you know, if you're a normal sighted person, maybe you don't notice it because you're not so acutely listening for that kind of stuff. If you're, you know, like on a sidewalk and you're crossing a road and you know, you can't see, you're obviously mm-hmm. listening a lot, but better than some, you know, normal person who's, you know, a normal sighted person that, is crossing the road. So I don't know. I haven't seen any studies that say that the sound.
NHTSA claimed that they have.
And
it's a claim that they have studies that shows that pedestrian sound actually have a positive impact. However, I just I don't know how thorough are those studies, because they started publishing that in like 2015 or something, when there weren't that many electric cars on the road and everything. So I don't know.
Also, it's kind of weird. There's not a standardized sound, and like frankly, that would be horrible if there was, but. You know, it's kind of strange that there isn't something. And then, you know, like, okay, so there's not a standardized sound. Can you make it? Like, can you pick your sound?
Yeah, you can. You can pick your sound tones.
Can you?
They all have different sound.
So, like, so you could pick a, you know, a blank sound, or you could pick, you know, ludicrous. You know, you could pick a lot of.
Oh, okay, stuff. Okay. No, you mean the exactly. Driver picks a sound. I thought the automaker. No, the automakers can have all different sounds. Like, yeah, I didn't get that. You mean the driver can pick a sound? Like, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe some sounds are not wouldn't bother you as much, but you're not supposed to hear them if like you have your windows closed and everything. So it's supposed really just to be from outside, for people outside the vehicle. And Tesla sounds are not too bad. They're different from the backing sound and then going forward, so you know like a difference. And the backing sound sounds more like a truck backing sound, not as aggressive as that. But and the moving forward sound is basically just like the sounds of a Tesla motor, but amplified a little bit. So as if maybe like a Tesla motor that when it's driving at more than 20 miles per hour or whatever. All right, the hardware 3.0 full self-driving computer retrofit program tentatively started this week. We got confirmation from an owner. We got it in his Model S 2.5. However, it's starting very slow, right? So don't request it from Tesla if you're supposed to have one. And of course, if people are supposed to have one, or people that bought the full self-driving package. If you have a Tesla vehicle and you bought the full self-driving package, you are eligible for the full self-driving computer retrofit. Of course, if you bought a full self-driving package, if you bought the car from April, March for Model S and X, right? What was it? For Model S and X, it's around March 20th. And for Model 3, it's around April 12th. So those cars, they already have the FSD computer in it. But for people that bought their car from Autopilot 2.0, which was October 2016, up to those dates that I just mentioned, if you have bought the software full self-driving package, you are allowed to get the full self-driving computer upgrade. But the guy that who got it, so Tesla's apparently making group of like group one, group two, and everything for people to get it. So right now they're in group one, and your car needs to already be in service. So if you're already scheduled to go to service for something else and your car is within the first group, then they are going to, I assume, with availability of the computer, of course, upgrade your car. Elon said that eventually it's going to be mobile service, so you don't need to bring your car to service. But right now, they are, of course, trying to limit the work needed to get it done. And, you know, of course, if the car is already in service, that helps a lot of that. That reduces the man hours needed to do it, because it's going to be a massive, massive retrofit program. I mean, technically, there are hundreds of thousands of cars that are eligible for that program if they buy the FSD. We don't have numbers on how many people bought the FSD package. The last time I got them was like, I think, early 2018, and it was like a 35% take rate. I assume that that's way up by now since Tesla launched the FSD computer, since Tesla started talking more about what they're doing with the full self-driving, since the autonomy event thing. I think all those things are starting to increase the FSD take rate. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's in the hundreds of thousands. So Tesla needs to not only make computers for the new, well, Tesla, I mean, they were made with Samsung, I think. They need not to need to make enough new computers for new cars, which is like 6,000 a week. they also need to make some for the SATA accumulate and retrofit to the new retrofit program. So a lot of work, but it is starting. So I think it's going to take more than a year, easy. But at the same time, you have to keep in mind that there's not the big difference upgrading right now because the Tesla software is just not advanced enough. The self-driving software is not advanced enough that you don't necessarily need the capacity of the new computer. So it's not that big of a deal if you don't get it right away. But it's a cool-looking, shiny computer. Someone in the comments on that article that I wrote, they brought up something interesting, said, and I don't know if you have any ideas about that. They said that what are they going to do with the older computers, which are still pretty powerful computers, and they're going to, like I just said, end up NVIDIA. With hundreds of thousands of them. So what kind of cool things do you think they could make with that?
I mean, it doesn't include the screen, right? It's just the computer.
Yeah, it's just the computer power. It's just the graphic cards and the motherboard.
But it's like, it's NVIDIA, like hardcore NVIDIA stuff, right?
Yeah, because you can make like some kind of super powerful AI computer. You can make like crypto miners. You can make you can make things like that.
That's a good question. I don't know. I feel like Tesla's too creative a company not to figure out something.
You could just recycle them too, maybe. Like, you know.
I don't think so.
No, there's just too many of them. Like it would crash the market for like refurbished NVIDIA graphic cards.
I mean, I don't know if you can suck off any of those parts, but
Sure the graphic cards are just still good. Like you can refurbish them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess a crypto miner would just buy all 100,000 or whatever of them and set up a big mining rig.
Yeah,
I mean that would be worth more than recycling them by itself.
Probably. Maybe Tesla get into the business on its own. Get some Ethereum.
Some solar powered mining grids.
That might be why they are putting solar power in the factory. Who knows?
Right.
All
right.
The ID.3 officially launched this week at the Frankfurt Auto Show. So we saw for the first time the final production version of the car. Looking sweet.
I think it looks nice.
Looking sharp. Do you like those wheels though?
Nope.
Yeah, it's the only thing that I'm not a fan of. It looks like a beautiful hatch. Very much golf-looking car, but
I like how the hatch wraps around the rear light.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah, and all the roof flows all the way back to like a rear spoiler of a made from the roof. It looks cool.
So I know I bring this up quite a bit, but it just again shows you like how badly Chevy dropped the ball with the Bolt. Because it's pretty much the same body type as a Chevy Bolt. It's a little bit wider, a little bit longer, not as tall. But pretty much the kind of the same body shape as a Bolt. And, you know, Chevy had this, 4 years ago? Or 3 years ago? And very limited sales. Obviously, VW is coming in with lower prices. But they're manufacturing this at huge scales. So... And, you know, they're not even bringing them out till next summer. So, to me, it's kind of like, well, Chevy had something similar to this 3 years ago. They could have really, had they really updated it a lot, they could have really, theoretically, had a market leader. And, you know, obviously, this is designed better inside and, well, definitely inside, but outside definitely as well. So, I don't know. It just, to me, it's like a missed opportunity for Chevy seeing this come out.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. But coming back, especially to the ID.3 here, it's going to be available in three different variants. The basic variant, the mid-range one, and the long-range one. And the first one is going to be available as the ID.3 first editions. It's the mid-range one, which is equipped with the 58 kilowatt-hour battery pack. They say it's going to be 420 kilometers, but that's WLTP. So give or take a few dozen kilometers. It's going to be equipped with an 11 kilowatt AC charger. Pretty good. 100 kilowatt DC fast charging capacity. which not on par with what people are coming out these days. As I mean, these days you don't see much under 150, but you're talking about a smaller batch pack here, 58 kilowatt hours. So,
I mean, there are quite a few under 100 kilowatt, like, you know, in Europe, the Renault Zoe, the new one that that Mike is reviewing now, is 50 kilowatt. Disappointing. So it's not alone. I mean, I think the Honda is also very low, but you know, it is what it is. This isn't a high end car.
Yeah, we don't have all the details about pricing. Like they've been slow releasing those. Because I think it's going to be like, it's not that cheap. I think it's going to be closer to 35,000 euros starting with, for that mid-range version. The standard version, the basic version, is going to be the one that starts at 30,000 euros, which is the equivalent of about 33,000 US. And, that version has, only a 45 kilowatt batch pack. They say, WLTP 230 kilometers, so about 300 kilometers car here, which is not that good for 30,000 euros. I mean, I thought it would be more competitive than that. That would be like more competitive than the Nissan Leaf or something, but it's around the same capacity for price, a little bit more expensive. So I don't know. The long range version, 77 kilowatt battery pack. So now you're talking, that's significant. And that goes up to, like 240 miles, 550 kilometers. So that's a lot. And they boost the charging rate to 125 kilowatt, which again,
now we're talking.
Yeah, it's a little bit better, but I would have liked to see like 150. I don't know why they cannot do 150 when Audi can do it. Like Audi is Volkswagen. So, but still, the interior looks pretty good. Nothing incredible. Something that we expect for like a, I don't know. I feel a little bit underwhelmed by the whole thing. I don't know about you.
Well, I mean, it's supposed to be the low end, not the low end, but the, you know, value option. You know, I don't think it's that bad. I kind of see a little bit of Tesla Model 3 inspiration in the dash. You know, it's very,
yeah, but you know that the user interface is going to be like a third as good as Tesla, something like that. Like, it's, unless there's a big improvement, but legacy automakers and nobody, it's not their forte.
Yeah, I mean, some people actually, you know, that they don't use computers a lot or something, but they don't like Tesla's interface and they like the traditional interface. You know, multiple traditional interfaces of traditional car companies. I'm not in that group, but I know people like that. Maybe this is going to be something that they like.
Hmm.
I definitely like the play button on the accelerator and the pause button.
Yeah, I thought it was a joke. But it looks like it's actually on the car. So
you think they would do the stop button though? Why pause? Whatever, same deal.
Mm.
Same thing, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like a cool car. I would love to drive.
Yeah, it. Yeah, we need to get inside the car and get the proper look to give a full opinion on it. But right now I'm like I'm just a little bit curious, like how it's going to sell really in the market, because I like they're clearly framing it to be an important car, high volume vehicle and everything. It's just I thought it would be priced a little bit more aggressively than that.
Well, I mean, there'll be incentives.
Oh yeah, that's right. I mean, especially like Norway would probably make or break that car, because Norway loves the Golf. Golf was the best-selling cars for years before electric cars came. Still, the e-Golf sells very well there. So that's the e-Golf killer, basically. And we'll see how it performs in Norway. If it performs well in Norway, the car's going to probably do well. All right, next one is Mercedes-Benz EQS. So their first all-electric sedan.
Prototype.
Yeah, that's very much a concept car. But of course, they planned an electric sedan to come with, and the Mercedes EQC concept came out. And then the next year, they unveiled the production version of that. It was heavily based on it, so you can make out some of the design features. However, it looks very much like a concept right now, doesn't it? Especially the interior. The interior is like, yeah, all right, that's never going to happen. But as for the specs, also that's why I'm throwing me off a little bit, because they're supposed to cut out that car like within the next 2 years or something, and they're claiming they're setting the bar pretty high for the specs right now. 350 kilowatt motor, dual motor powertrain, range of 435 miles, 700 kilometers WLTP. So let's say 380 miles real world range. Yeah, that's a lot. 350 kilowatt charging. Porsche was supposed to come out with that. That didn't happen. Went down to 270. So, I mean, I want them to come out with that, because otherwise it looks weird. Like, they bring out this concept of a car that we know they're planning to release the EQS in the next 2 years or something. So it would be weird for them, like, here's the car, here's what they're capable of doing. Then they come out with the production version. Oh, by the way, we're down to 300 miles of range and 250 kilowatt of charging.
But that's kind of what Porsche did.
Yeah, you're right. That's what they did.
I don't know. I don't see. I mean,
and I was disappointed by it too.
The thing with the concept car, though, is like you just make up stuff. You know, like those seats. There's no way in the world that those seats are going to see production. But they're making up, you know, they have a fantasy. This is a fantasy car. So they put fantasy specs on it.
It's a fantasy, but not, well,
no basis in reality.
Yeah, they didn't outright say that that's going to be the production spec, so that's fair. Porsche, they did say that, like, the 350 kilowatt charging was coming. Like, that they did say, so.
Yeah, and to be fair,
they say it's still coming.
They say it's still coming, although you're going to have to pay extra for it, and there's going to be like six chargers in the world that'll be capable of doing it. But it's, you know, they're really doing it. I just wonder, like, okay, so they're saying it's going to go 400, what, how many miles? 435 miles. So, like, what kind of, it's going to have 150 kilowatt hour battery pack?
No,
or something?
No, no. 120, you can do that.
120? Yeah. I mean, that's with an efficient car. This does not look like an efficient car. Mercedes and BMWs are not efficient cars.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't think 435 is realistic, especially not.
I mean, what's the Tesla? Like, EPA is like 370 now on 100, right. 100D?
Yeah, but that's
an efficient car. Yeah.
I mean, right now, Porsche, Audi, Jaguar are having trouble getting like much beyond 200 miles.
But again, I come back to the fact they're doing that with their big battery reserve thing, which I think is an overkill, right? Because they're not confident yet in their battery pack manufacturing capability, like longevity of their battery pack.
Right.
Basically, they are over-engineering the battery pack because they are afraid of how long the battery cells will last. I think that's their thinking. Within time and within having cars on the road for a while, I think they will grow in confidence and maybe eventually reduce that large battery reserve that they have on those cars that of course reduce the efficiency a lot. So I'm optimistic about that. But at the same time, like, the other way could go around too, if they actually like over-engineer and failed in doing so. For example, the Audi, which got a battery recall real quick over a default on the battery pack. So, but apparently the sales are pretty good now for the e-tron. So we'll see, at least in Europe. In Europe, the sales are pretty good, and they're ramping up in the US too. So we'll see. All right, the Honda E. At the Frankfurt Auto Show, they released the first production version, but I mean, they released like three different prototypes of that thing, and they all look very much the same to me. But this new one also looks very close to what we saw last earlier this year, actually, and last year too, when they unveiled another one, but probably more different than that one. Anyway, they announced the pricing for the first time. They were saying that it's going to be an affordable vehicle, and sure enough, they were talking about 29,000 euros, but that's in Germany, including the subsidy. So 32,400 euros. Well, wait a minute. Okay, no, that's for the faster version. Okay, so they just said 29,500 euros. That's including the 4,000.
Right. So that's the equivalent of around 33,000 euros.
Yeah, basically. That's for...
For that spec of car, I guess it's a good deal. Like, it's kind of going up against the Mini E now, and that's going to be similarly priced. It doesn't have quite the range that you would kind of expect for 30,000, but...
It's
a pretty car.
I want to see the Nissan Leaf price in Germany.
The new one?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, they're listing me used one. Why did they say used one? Is the Nissan Leaf sold in Germany?
I'm sure.
Because I feel like that's going against that too. I mean, it's a little bit smaller, like city car-like, but I feel like the price has to be pretty close to 30,000 euros too. And I would definitely go for a Leaf over that, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of people buy cars based on the look.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, almost exclusively. And this does have an interesting look. I think a lot of people like
Interior is awesome. Looks great. Interior looks very sharp. Large screen that wraps around the car. Looks very good. I like the seats. Like a ritual feel to it. Offered with a glass roof. But yeah, the powertrain, 35.5 kilowatt battery, 125 miles of range. It sounds 2016 to me, but.
Right.
And that car, again, just like the ID.3, apparently it's launching right now. Production version is launching right now, but sales are starting in summer 2020. They are accounting the sales until then. And I have to assume that it has to do with the EU regulations. They want those sales to count for that, and it ramps up next year for the emission regulation in Europe. They also released a few other things at the Frankfurt Auto Show. They showed their new Honda Power Charger, which is their home charging station. Offered as a single-phase 7.4 kilowatt station or a three-phase 22 kilowatt station. So, depending on your needs, you can buy that's the charging station with the Honda E. And they add the Honda Power Manager, which is a bi-directional charger. So, apparently the Honda E is going to be able to do a vehicle-to-grid, vehicle-to-home, I should say. It's a vehicle-to-grid, all right. They're going to have a trial for that. Like Nissan is the same thing, but it's limited to some market where it actually makes sense to have that capacity to use your car energy capacity to power your home or to send energy back to the grid. And they're going to do a trial next year when the car comes out. They're going to release that new Honda Power Manager and do some trial with it. And then we'll see about the commercialization of the product. The Renault QZ. All right, I'm thinking I'll pronounce it like that. It's a little all-electric crossover that we talked about last year. When Renault launched it last year, we weren't impressed by the powertrain at all because powertrain is like 190 kilometers, 118 miles of range. It's very small car too. Like the format is a little bit deceiving. It looks like almost an SUV, but it's a very small crossover, more like Bolt styles, Bolt EV styles. But they framed it. They emphasized the fact it's gonna be affordable, people. So I'm like, okay, I'm not impressed by powertrain everything, but if it is affordable, like yeah, it could be a good car. And they released the price this week with the production version in China. It's $9,000, people.
Crazy.
Yeah. So 66,000 yuan, which is equivalent about $9,400. And of course, I assume that that's with subsidies because that would be crazy. So it's probably closer to $15,000-$20,000, which is still pretty good. Like there's not that many EVs out there for that price. It looks kind of cheap, people. Like, you know, like it's not in the interior. Like, but
it has to. I mean, it has
exactly.
To be
cheap. It has to be. There are plenty of other cheap gasoline car out there for that price. So now they have a competition all electric, though. It is the range is limited, but for a city car, it's plenty of range. The power is also very limited. A 33 kilowatt electric motor. I don't think I've ever seen anything like that in an EV.
Well, yeah, on you mean not motorcycles?
Yeah, well, it's not a motorcycle. Yeah, you're right. Like the LiveWire is around that, right?
Right, a little bit more, I believe. Yeah. So also, this is a vehicle for China. So even though Renault is the make of it, it's made by Renault's partner in China. It's made for the Chinese market, so it's got like
they're talking about global zero release.
Yeah, eventually. Yeah. But this particular one is a Chinese car. It hasn't been, theoretically, there's not going to be the same type of airbags and safety tests as like a car in Europe or the U.S. But you know, like this sells well there. You could retrofit some. So, or change the design a little bit, add some weight, add some framing, and maybe it works in the U.S. I mean, like, I feel like if the car came out looking like this and sold for a very low price like this one is, I feel like it would do quite well.
Probably. However, you have to take into account, like, it's not just, like, you're right, that probably, like, the safety features, they don't need to be as thorough as a car that's approved for the U.S. market or even the European market. So that could affect the pricing. But also, you have to look at the battery pack here. It's a 26.8 kilowatt battery pack using ternary lithium cells from Tianjin Lithium in China, which are known to be like cheaper, much cheaper cell than the
right
than an AMC or NCA lithium ion cell. So I would be curious to see how many cycles that thing lasts and everything. So there's other things to take into account, but if it lasts, if the degradation is not too much after like 100,000 miles or something, yeah, and they can get the price to something closer to like $15,000-$18,000 before incentive, and then they get the incentive, then yeah, you can definitely launch that in the U.S. for sure.
And like, frankly, if it never even comes to the U.S. and the Western Europe or Europe in general, like it's still going to be on the streets of China and India.
So it's going to have an impact.
So
it's going to have an impact.
Big impact. So great for Renault.
Yeah, it should turn some gas mileage into electric mileage, which is the most important thing. All right, we're going to end on the good news for Rivian. They raised some more cash. I mean, they cannot stop raising cash, those people. It's insane. Since Cox Automotive, if you don't know Cox Automotive, they're big. They have a bunch of very well-known brands like the Kili Blue Book and... Auto Trader and all that? They own all that stuff. So a bunch of cars-related service auction, buying, tutorial experience, stuff like that. They're big on that. Of course, Kili Blue Book is the standard in the U.S. for car pricing and stuff like that. Anyway, they invested $350 million in Rivian, which is a lot, and it adds to basically the whole round of investment that they made this year since unveiling the cars last November. In 2019 alone, this $350 million investment, after the Amazon investment, the Ford investment, brings the total investment to over $1.5 billion in 2019. That's a lot of money. And we were hearing that they were already somewhat well-funded before unveiling the cars, the pickup truck, the R1T and the R1S SUV last year. So it's a private company. We don't know their finances, but I would speculate that they are sitting on a lot of cash and getting ready to bring those cars to production. I'm also thinking that they are sitting on a lot of reservations too. So combine that to the launch of production, and they're going to start bringing some money. So maybe it was a good investment for Amazon and for Ford. I'd like to know how much, how big of a stake Amazon and Ford got out of those investments. Because Amazon invested $700 million. And
$700 million, I believe.
Ford invested $500 million.
Yeah, I mean, it's already a multi-billion-dollar company, so like theoretically, they should be able to make some cars.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And you have to keep in mind that before all that, before unveiling the cars, before raising that money, they already had a factory that used to produce cars from Mitsubishi. And right. They were already working on retrofitting that factory to make it ready to produce their electric cars. And that was like 3 years ago or something. Yeah, 3 years ago that they bought the factory. Of course, they weren't there because the cars, the prototypes weren't even ready. So you need a product to be able to set up the manufacturing to know exactly what you're going to make. But I'm sure they were already working on some subsystem that they were already ready for production. But most of the work that happened in the last year, now that they have their truck that they want to bring to production. But if I was to bet on the company, on an electric car startup that keeps their timeline, and their timeline right now is end of 2020, I would bet on Rivian for sure to keep that timeline. But I'm also giving them some leeway if they do slip a few, like within 6 months, I wouldn't criticize them too much about that, because I mean, we've seen the Faraday Future slip out for like 2 years now, 3 years maybe. Lucid Motors, I think Lucid Motors said 2018 originally. So they are probably delayed for a year now, but now I think they're seeing 2021. So, yeah, Rivian is well set up, and I have my reservation still. I'm still excited about that. I'm not exactly sure if I'm going to go through with it, but
did you reserve the pickup or the SUV?
The pickup truck. Right. Yeah, I want an electric pickup truck. I think it would be fun to have an electric pickup truck, to go camping with it or something, to go in the woods and bring my Surin bike on with it.
Right.
So you can go like electric truck, electric bike in the back and just go with it. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, there's going to be other option at this point. When it comes out, it looks like Tesla's going to aim to come out around the same time with the pickup truck. I'll see what Tesla got. Because it's not going to be cheap, the Rivian. I mean, you start at $69,000, but that's the base version with the 100 kilowatt-hour battery pack. I might want the 180 to get that long range. I mean, I don't need that long range as much, but if you're towing something, if you have like a load in the back, now that's when you need that energy capacity. So.
That's a huge battery. Yeah. I mean, that'll power your house for like weeks. Yeah. So that's interesting that you're going to be driving around a 180 kilowatt hour battery. Yeah.
All right. That's pretty much all for us this week, everyone. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for watching on YouTube. We're going to see you same place, same time next week. Ciao.